It's not going to be a part of this program, brother.
Blog Talk Radio.
I wonder, will it ever be the same? In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, I bear witness that there is no God but Allah. And I bear witness that Muhammad is his messenger. And I bear witness that the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan is our divine reminder. I would like to greet all of you who are joining us in the various chat rooms, as well as those of you who are joining us via telephone, and our greeting words of peace. Assalamu alaikum. And it is my distinct pleasure and privilege to be back with all of you this evening. I want to share just some brief history about this particular topic before we bring on our keynote address speaker, our guest, our returning family member, Dr. Randy Short. And, of course, as always, I have Brother James Muhammad on the phone. I don't know if he's going to be speaking tonight, but he's always right there as a steady support. But I want to tell everyone and explain to everyone, I don't know how this is going to go over. I have wrestled with this topic since the death of our dear brother Malcolm Shabazz. It was a topic that I have been hesitant to talk about because of the sensitivity between the relationship of Malcolm X and the Nation of Islam, but Allah has set it down in my spirit so deep, and it's just been nagging at me, so I pray that Allah's will is done, and whatever we share with you tonight is pleasing to him, because this is something that I, for some reason, I couldn't shake it, I couldn't ignore it, I couldn't put it on the back burner. It has been nagging at me since the time of his demise. And so joining me tonight is someone who had the honor and the privilege of befriending Malcolm Latif Shabazz in the last year of his life. And, of course, he's been with us before talking about Deborah Prevera, but he's back with us once again. Dr. Randy Short, please reintroduce yourself or present yourself, sir.
Thank you, sister. God bless you. I want to say to everyone, if you're Muslim, I pray that your month of Ramadan was one in which God revived you through the fasting and through the breaking of the fast and through the different Eids. If you're a Christian, I pray that you're being faithful. And, of course, to all African-American sisters and brothers, I am a Washingtonian, an African-American Indian who is of Muslim descent from the House of Fulani, Balanta, and Teka people. I am somehow related to the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, inasmuch as my family has the surname Poole from Sandersville, Georgia. And so this is, I always feel as if I'm amongst family when I am with people in the nation. And as much as there is a spiritual, historical, and genetic connection on every imaginable way. Many of my family were sold through the Lewisburg slave market, which is more than likely the same place in which the Messenger's family were reduced to chattel and sold off. And we thank God for all that he and his legacy have done. And I believe that I'm here to dispel any fear or any apprehension that Sister Queen Aziza has, because one thing I knew about Malcolm Shabazz is that he loved the children that he knew from the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and did not have any resentment or bitterness towards rank and file, maybe an individual, but you know, you hear what you hear. Let's remember that. So in this very kitchen, which I'm multitasking, trying to sneak myself something to eat while I'm talking to you, when I would talk to him about the nation, he said he liked a lot the nation,
was pro-black, and they did things in a way that a lot of the other so-called normal or orthodox Muslims don't do, in case y'all didn't know that. So a lot of us have grown, and if Malcolm were alive, he would be laughing with the smile that he'd have, that the group that he felt he had the least to be concerned about in terms of something happening to him was a group that stood up. While there's a shadow cast over these relations, in reality, a lot of that didn't apply to him because things move on. And because he understood COINTELPRO. My problem was not the Honorable Elijah Muhammad or anyone else's. Our problem is J. Edgar Hoover, white supremacy, white imperialism, white globalism, white Illuminati, white hatred, white enslavement and exploitation of other people. And if you control the money supply, if you control the lives of people, you'll always find traitors. They're in the church. They're in the masjid. Martin Luther King, he had people set him up, and they weren't people that could be called Muslims. So it's not about Islam. It's not about the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and all the great things that he did and he's continued to do because he lived. It's about our struggle with getting our freedom, and Malcolm got that. Are y'all still with us?
Yes, sir. Okay. All right.
This is not going to be a day where we pick on the Nation of Islam. I'm certainly not going to do it. And if anybody calls up, I'm going to jump on them because I actually knew, love, hugged, talked to the brother. And if somebody else wants to do what they're going to do, let's see them be brave enough to go up against the state. Didn't you tell me, Sister Aziza, that they've reopened the file on Malcolm X? It's active again?
Yes, sir, they did.
So don't they think that they have something to do with this one, just like they set up the last one? Does it matter if I'm a person that's the puppet master? You can't really complain about the puppet. Not that I like what puppets do. So do you understand? I am sick and tired of this division. And Malcolm was sick of it. So let's move on. Let's look and see how Louis Farrakhan, the Honorable Louis Farrakhan, who was set up to be killed by the FBI, using this boy and his mama, who's spoken up? Only him. Sharpton grew up with his daughter grew up with Malcolm. Where's Sharpton's comment? Where's Jesse's comment? Where's everybody else? Where are the churches? Where's the Congressional Black Caucus? They haven't said a peep. Where are their papers? Who's been covering this? The final call. Who released the news on what's going on in Mexico? The final call. Farrakhan's paper. The money that folks are fighting over in court right now. Who gave it to Duddy Shabazz? Okay, I'm done with that. I'm finished.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Short. And I wanted people to get an opportunity because a lot of us know of Malcolm Shabazz. Of course, we've heard the nasty and ugly and untrue rumors of him. If you would, just for a moment, Dr. Short, expound on what type of person was Malcolm?
Okay. There are many layers to Malcolm Shabazz. Given that we have a Zionist, racist, anti-black, anti-God, anti-Muslim media, everybody knows the bad. I would like to take this time to talk about what good I knew and others knew about him. First and foremost, no matter what you heard bad about this guy, I know he liked to pray. I know he was spiritual. I know he loved children. I know he loved nature. I know he loved to laugh. I know he loved to read. I know he wanted to pick up and resume his Islamic studies in Iran. which certain things came into play that prevented that from happening. I know that he's a very sensitive person. I know he was a young African-American man who grew up without a father and a family, without a grandfather, without uncles. And so he was very, very, if you ever got to know him, there were two Malcolms. Malcolm often had to try to make certain, did you like him for who he was, or were you after an autograph or some family heirloom or an interview? There are a lot of groupies. Groupies warp the character of people. And you get a star, a good singer, and they're nice at first because 1,000 people tell them that they're Jesus. Then they want to put you on the cross, and you pay for it. If Malcolm, he would often test people, he, in his own way of, and we have to remember this, this boy is targeted by the state as a baby. As a baby. As a baby. They, the same way they made Trayvon Martin seem like a grown man against that child molester Jew named Zimmerman, they didn't see the boy in Trayvon. And we've never been allowed to see that Malcolm was very much a boy. And in fact, when Malcolm would be here in the house with me, he would be like a 10-year-old, not in a negative way, just as mild and sweet and quiet and introspective. Okay, none of this stuff that's in the papers. In fact, I'm so glad when you got him away from people, he would tell me he didn't like giving lots of speeches, but because they destroyed his name and his reputation and destroyed his life from infancy, it was hard for him to be rooted anywhere and be certain. And in a family full of women, and I'm not picking, but you go Google, there's something going on. I'm not here. I love the sisters that I've met. I'm not here to put any family member down. There are struggles in the families where the leaders or the head of the family were killed by the actions of this white supremacist fascist state. And the psychic trauma goes generation to generation, and the little family has had people killed for over 100 years. So this boy came with a heavy cross on him, and he came up with a lot less family support in certain ways than his grandfather did. His grandfather had his dad, you know. Okay, at least initially, there was a father. I know what it's like to be in Libya with Malcolm, and the boy is close to being in tears because he had hoped that he could probably get over to Algeria and meet his father. And it didn't happen, okay? You understand what I'm saying? Here's someone I found at 26, still wanting to meet his dad. Still wanting to meet his dad. Do you love me? We have so many young black men and women who do not know what it's like to have a loving father. You know, going back to the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, haven't his children turned out okay in spite of what other folks said? They're doing a lot better than the King kids and a whole bunch of other people's kids. I'm not saying to put nobody down, but there was somebody that loved them. They knew who they were. This boy did not have that. I mean, he started off behind the eight ball. Something else you need to know about Malcolm. Malcolm loved children. Malcolm was very hurt that he wasn't making the kind of money that he needed to pay the child support the way he would have if he had had a way to consistently get money to come in. Malcolm trusted people. If he thought you were for him, he trusted you completely. Given the difficulty in his life, I was amazed at how much trust he put in folks. So he was very much a man-child. Sometimes he was like being around a 100-year-old man, and other times it's like being around a 5-year-old in the same conversation. Because there wasn't the smooth transition. I'm not trying to pick on anyone. I'm going to say this not to attack anybody. but for people to have some compassion, that there were discussions that this boy should have been terminated in his mother's womb. Okay? It's a miracle, no matter what happened in his life, that he even got here. And that's one of the things. So Malcolm's a miracle that his mother refused to not bring this boy into the world when there were people and voices saying, you're not married, you're young, you'll have another one. And she hasn't had another one. So this boy was special. The seventh person from his grandfather and the family, if you look at the book, the seventh son, they talk about the seventh child always being special in the little lineage. So this boy had something special about him. And speaking of that, he was so clear that he wasn't supposed to be born to some people, that he was very, very, very anti Planned Parenthood, anti-eugenics. He admired the stance of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad around the womb being sacred and motherhood being sacred. I didn't know that. That's a whole lot. A lot of people didn't know that he didn't grow up Muslim per se. He was, his mother had become a Quaker or something. I hope I'm getting that right. I think it's a Quaker. But he didn't come up in Islam. So he was in around, and Malcolm grew up around a lot of white people. He's very comfortable with all kinds of people. Black, I mean, he could just come up, and I'm thinking, this is Malcolm X's grandson. He's just chilling with white folks. I mean, he had so much about him that was likable. But if you attack a person, remember, your first 6 years of your most important years, they had already set him up to be killed before he was five. The whole state, can you imagine growing up knowing the state wants you dead? The state with guided missiles and armies wants to kill a little black baby, just like Jesus in Bethlehem. He just want to take you out because you exist. He carries that weight. When they tortured that boy, when they put him in jail like an adult almost at 12, they abused him. They have these nine psychiatrists handling this kid. Nobody talks about this because I worked in media. When you want to make people hate somebody, you take away every way, every means in which that person may get some empathy or some understanding or some sympathy. Look at what they did over the last year with Trayvon. They brought up everything. If Trayvon had masturbated and they could have found that on the internet, they would have brought that up. That's why he killed him. He had some weed. You know what? Smoking weed the way America is, that's a prerequisite for being president. It sounds presidential if you get high. When you're young, you need to stop. Obama got high. Clinton got high. Bush got high. Poppy Bush got high. Nixon got high. Lyndon got high.
Right.
They say he had a lot of women.
Well, you know, that was about character assassination. You kill the character first before you, you know.
He would say that over and over and over and over and over again. Malcolm was a very tolerant person. Malcolm loved the Middle East. Malcolm, wow, if he'd come to the house, he'd just sit down and chill, read a book. Malcolm wanted to be loved and accepted. He had a little devilish side, but you know what? Malcolm was almost like a lot of young folks that get in gangs when you don't have a strong family structure. And let's make this clear. When his grandfather was deceased, Betty Shabazz did not introduce her daughters to the Littles. She kept her children away from a lot of their roots. The children came up very, very bourgeois at the international school. I'm not knocking it. I'm only saying that the mother and the father had different views about the world, about money, about this, about that, and about fitting in. I don't think Malcolm would have wanted a national holiday in this country. Betty Shabazz wanted a national holiday for Malcolm X. Okay, do you see what I'm saying? A black nationalist will take a holiday. Why would we ask the same Peckerwood that shot me to honor me? You know, when was the last time you saw a dog made in charge of making hydrants sand, hygienic? Would you put a dog in charge of cleaning fire hydrants? No. Because we know what dogs do to fire. So why would we look to our butchers and our oppressors to do something for us? So
right.
You have to understand that contradiction exists. And it may still exist. And I'm not judging anyone. I'm only saying that we have different interests and concerns in this African-American experience and families. I'm the brokest person and the best educated person at the same time. I'm a person that's likely to go over and hang out with Gaddafi, and the other folks want to hang with Obama. Same family, same DNA. I can't stand a brother, and other people love him. We've got differences. And so Malcolm, he learned about his grandfather, and y'all need to know this. They didn't talk to him much about his grandfather, believe it or not. What he would share with me was there was a big picture on the wall, and he said his mother would tell him that was his dad. So he grew up assuming that Malcolm X was his father, and that was good enough for him. Didn't tell him much about him. He learned about his grandfather in jail. Okay? In the same place, he converted to Islam while incarcerated. Okay, I'm not trying to put dirt out. Okay, I'm trying because if the family heard that, I want anyone to think that I don't respect and love and mourn their loss too. But he converted, as he told me, in jail, and he learned outside. So perhaps, if I understand it, maybe people didn't want the past to make them prisoners of it. On one hand, I've seen this in black families where they don't tell kids stuff because they don't want to embitter the kids. And then the kids come up rootless because they don't know. And then it's too late to tell them at 25, 26, oh, by the way, you're an African American. We were enslaved and the other people hate us. And then they've got like 8 kids with the fattest, most unattractive white woman who's got more fingers than teeth, right? It's too late.
Oh, wow.
Yes, I said
okay.
It. I mean,
okay,
wait
a minute, Dr. Randy. Wait a minute, hold on, because I want to get some integral parts in here, and I don't want you to tell us everything all at one time, but because we want to talk about the legacy, though, because the whole point of this show that has always knocked me off my feet when I heard of his death was, of course, there's a legacy of murder here, you know, and the first thing that came to my mind when I heard of his death was, what is it about this, and I'm sorry, this is just how it came to me, what is it about the DNA of this group of men, this family of men that white America is so afraid of? That was the first thing that came to my mind, and then the rage. Because if you look at his father, Malcolm X's father, Earl Little, which would be the great-grandfather of Malcolm Shabazz, he was a follower of Marcus Garvey. He was, you know, harassed and eventually killed in a mysterious incident with a train, which, of course, we can just about almost say for certain that it was murder. And then, of course, Malcolm X, and now before this young man could really, really flourish and reach his full potential, he's mysteriously involved in a barroom brawl, so to speak.
So you've been told that is crazy.
I'm sorry?
So you've been told it's a barroom brawl.
Yeah.
Okay. Now.
Yeah, so I mean, all of that to me is very mysterious that this
family.
It's mysterious to me because I'm going to tell you why. Because, Malcolm is gone. Malcolm Shabazz is gone. Malcolm X is gone. Earl Little is gone. Now, if we are to see a male heir from this legacy, now we are waiting on what? The great-great-grandchildren of Malcolm X? And then do we as a people move in to protect this family? Because no one seems to be outraged about this murder. That's what I'm talking about.
Well, the minister, Louis Farrakhan, seems outraged about it. Who's ever editing the final call seems to be outraged about it. You seem to be outraged about it. I've encountered many people outraged about it. One other thing, there was an article that came out in the Griot today talking about the dynasties of the civil rights people all being basically in ruin. You know, Jesse Jr. with the "bet you can't steal it all" thing with the people's money. Now he's going to go to jail for 30 months. And then his wife, she was up there, you know, helping the Betty Crocker the book or whatever she was doing. And was it a $43,000 watch for a white mistress? And she helped cover that up. Hell, I would have. She could have saved herself some jail time snitching back then, but that's okay. And the Jacksons with Warren Wyatt, she should have won one, saved herself some trouble. But anyway, all of the black families have trauma. Jesse's having the least amount of trauma. Their trauma is stuffing all the money in their pockets. But the other people have had people get killed and die, you know, and they just put bullseyes on leaders and run. So I don't think we should believe in DNA apostolic succession for leadership. I sort of like what you do at the Nation of Islam. People with ability rise in the nation versus you have to be a direct DNA descendant from the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, be someone of importance, even though there's going to be some respect and veneration.
Wait a minute, Dr. Randy, your phone is breaking up. Your phone breaking up a little bit.
Okay, I'm sorry. Where did it work?
Okay.
What did you
we can hear you clearly now.
What I'm saying is DNA apostolic succession is not the way that we need to progress as a people. And in fact, you're in the nation. You guys have a good example where they bring in and train from childhood through the FOI and other groups where they create leadership instead of hoping that, you know, egg and sperm meet and the right people, the person comes out right 20-some-odd years later. That's no way to do things, you know. I mean, that's like playing crap with our race's future. We should be protecting everyone, not just people who have legacies, although this family should be protected, this family should be respected, and at the same time, those families that had these martyred family members need to both be gracious and mindful that being who they are isn't a right to loot financially or gold mine or gold dig the heritage for their own personal benefit. I'm not directing that towards any of the families in particular. I'm just making a statement because a lot of times people feel as if Martin Luther King only belongs his surviving three children, right? So I need to pay $1 million to hear I Have a Dream. I'm not against him getting some money for it, but do you mean the very people that he died for have to pay you to hear it? Seems like you should charge the white corporations that are stealing from us anyway, but don't do it to us. You know, imagine if I'm at a college or a university, I want to have a gathering and listen to Martin Luther King, and they want $30,000, and I'm at a broke school where, you know, people using notebook paper for toilet paper in the bathroom. This is outrageous. So we shouldn't count on that. And so we need to be grooming our leadership. We need to have our own schools, our own curriculum, our own bookstores, like we had the Tate Connection. We should be systematically preparing each generation. At the Muslim training school for the girls, at the Clara Muhammad schools, the same thing needs to exist, whether they're Muslim or not, need to have their own things to prepare people instead of counting on the luck of the dice over how someone from a certain family turns out. I think that Malcolm had the potential to do those things, and a lot of people ignore the fact all you need to do is go to YouTube. The boy must have at least a good 50, 60 to 100 interviews, and which hundreds of thousands of people have seen. We need to remember that his grandfather came into the Nation of Islam in his late 20s. If I'm correct, right? Late 20s. He wasn't anymore. He was maybe 26 when he came into the nation. All right? He's born in the 20s. Came to the Nation of Islam in the, 40s, 50s? 50s?
I think it was in the 50s.
He came in the 50s, exactly. And he was born in the 20s, right? Which means he came into the Nation of Islam just a little younger than what Malcolm was right now. Okay? Hi. Malcolm died at 39. Okay? That's 1965. He came in about 1953, 54. How long is he? He's in there like 10, 12 years. Forgive me for not remembering the exact number. But he wasn't in the nation 20
years. Yeah, I don't know the exact number either.
He wasn't in the nation 20 years, all right? And he was 11 years older than Malcolm when Malcolm died. And that, I'm trying to say to you, Malcolm was just in the age in which his grandfather came into his own. But you have to remember something. For the better part of the last 10 years, Malcolm's been traveling the world, giving speeches, had a book done, had another book in manuscript form. I mean, so he's done radio, television stuff globally for years. So in many ways, he's ahead of his grandfather. That's what makes it important to kill him. He's ahead. The big disadvantage that the boy had was the start was rockier than his father. He didn't have other siblings. You can draw some strength off of your having a sister. He had cousins. So he was already doing things. He had already earned. Most people don't know Malcolm had earned a theological degree in Syria. He had taught English in Syria. People forget that. I mean, Malcolm was late. The grandfather is late compared to the grandson traveling internationally. As far as been to England, born in France. He's been everywhere. Saudi Arabia, Yemen, Egypt.
Yeah, I think the concern came, and this is just my opinion, I think the concern came when he met with Gaddafi in Tripoli and when he started to speak on black unity and liberation on a more global scale, not just here in America, but internationally. And so that was something that had not been pursued by any particular leader in quite some time. And then also Malcolm X had a very piercing effect on people when he spoke. And I'm just saying, it's like they were sitting back watching and just would not even take the chance to watch him flourish. But before we go on, Brother Randy, we're going to take some questions. So sure. Area code 314, do you have a question for Dr. Short?
As-salamu alaykum.
Wa alaikum salam, Brother Kareem.
Good evening, and how are you, Queen?
I am fine. I am fine, Vice President of Nation Building Network. How are you, sir?
I'm fine. All praise is due to Allah. Thank you very, very much. I just, you know, I've been listening to the broadcast, learning some things I didn't know. But I also wanted to contribute this. I have a comment, and then I have a question. The thing is, I know that you all were talking about, just hopefully I can help and clarify. Malcolm was in the Nation of Islam. Malcolm X was in the Nation of Islam 13 years. His career in the Nation of Islam spanned 13 years. You know,
okay.
And, I mean, and as you said, he was very piercing. He was very piercing in his delivery. I mean, because growing up as a child, I mean, hey, Superman wasn't my hero. You know, that wasn't allowed in our house. All right. Malcolm X and Muhammad Ali were my heroes. All right. So, I mean, that's just the bottom line. The other thing is that along the lines of what you all have been discussing, and I do agree with Dr. Short on the fact that we cannot rely, and I will say this, solely on the genetic legacy, if you will, of our leadership. We have to rely on that power, that mind, and that spirit, if you will, throughout our entire people. You know, wherever we find it, we've got to cultivate it. However, in that respect, there's a document, and I don't know if people remember or any of them have even heard of it or not, but there was a document that circulated back in the 60s, came back out again in the 80s. The document was called the King Alfred Plan. Now, there were a lot of things that were in this particular plan, but this was a plan set up by the government. And one of the criteria for the plan, one of the, can't think of the military term or the covert term for it right now, but the bottom line was is that they were to watch not only current leaders of all quote-unquote black organizations considered a threat, but they were also to watch and maintain complete surveillance on any potential leadership in our ranks. And if that leadership, I mean, these are the words of the document, because we got it through the Freedom of Information Act, and if that leadership showed any sign of becoming a threat, the first thing was to discredit and then eliminate. So, I mean, it's no accident that this goes on. And because I myself hadn't heard anything about young Malcolm except for, as Dr. Short was talking about, the negative. That's all they were put out there. You know, the first I even heard of this young man was when they talked about he set a fire in his grandmother's house. You know, I mean, that's the first
right.
I heard of him. And like I said, and of course, me, myself, I have no love of or trust for the media. So I'm automatically suspicious of anything they say. When they say it, I mean, I don't know whether he did it or not. I don't know whether he was just in the house and they set the fire to kill her and set him up or to kill him. You know, I mean, we don't know what we want there. But I just wanted to share those things. But my question for Dr. Short is this. In light of our knowledge of the enemy that we're dealing with, and in light of his knowledge of young Malcolm, we're talking about the legacy now. Had he been allowed to continue, and when I say that, I'm not talking about by the enemy, I'm talking about by us. Embracing him, coming around him so that they didn't have an opportunity to get to him like that, however they got to him. Had he been embraced, what would have been, in Dr. Short's opinion, his eventual impact on our resurrection and our liberation?
You're asking me to create a history, I would say to you, if he had had some things in place that were not in place,
I still think he would have encountered repression from the state, the same way Fred Hampton Jr. and the children and grandchildren of these people. There's a book called White Out, and the book White Out talks about COINTEL, but most people are not aware that the FBI was after Martin Luther King from the time he was 14 years old.
Mm-hmm.
When Martin Luther King wanted to be with white girls and wanted nothing to do with anything, I mean, Martin Luther King grew up a completely middle-class life, missing his white friends that wouldn't play with him anymore. He went to an integrated YMCA meeting, and he got put on the list as a dangerous person. Because they figured, he's in Atlanta, Georgia, the home of Gone with the Wind, and he wants to be around white women. He's crazy. We'll never be able to control him. He's already out of control. I have other friends. In fact, one of my friends who's a friend of the minister, the Honorable Louis Farrakhan, my friend Bob Brown, got on the FBI list at the age of 12. They were after this boy when he was born. They knew his mother was in Paris. They were watching her. Remember, they didn't allow Malcolm to come into Paris. Remember?
Right.
And they let his, right. And they let his daughter come in. Do you really think the French, who really hate African Americans' influence in Africa, are going to let Malcolm X's daughter hook up with an Algerian? Go figure. That's the one they hate the most. Even who she got in bed with, they're worried, because that's going to create an Afro-Arab Muslim. That's a whole dynasty there, and of course they're going to hate the French. So even the way that the boy, who the boy's father was, is another set of problems. He's one of these angry Algerians, and his grandfather and great-grandfather angry. Everybody's scared. People don't, you see, they see our greatness 100,000 miles away. Satan can see God, and often the people of God don't realize that Satan can see them just as sure as we can see him. They saw this boy coming. Kabila, peace be upon her, no matter what people say, she was the most angry child of the six. So she had her father's and her grandfather's temperament, which means the boy got the temperament. Malcolm had to go to anger management. This is an angry, young, intelligent black man who knows what's been done to his family. Why wait? Why wait? So I don't want to speculate. They tried to set him up. You said you just heard about him, the caller, when the grandmother, but I remember when they used the Jew, Fitzgerald, a Jew with an Irish name, to try to get Kabila and this boy into something to attack the Honorable Louis Farrakhan, which would cause him and his mother perhaps to be harmed in retaliation. They planned a lot of people's deaths. They didn't wait for him to get five. So we deal with an implacable enemy. I might not agree with everything about Dr. Yacoub, but a hell of a lot of it makes sense to me, and I'm a Christian. It seems true to me. Bioengineering, biological weapons, diseases that only kill us. Don't you think if they can make a disease years in advance to kill us, that they can't kill a baby and a family that might create some problems? I'm sorry, I grew up with them. I just don't have any faith that chance would be allowed, and even with our people trying to protect, because we've got so many sellouts. I call them blacknecks. We have so many traitors in our community. We would literally need to do some major house cleaning to be able to receive children like him, because there are people who would hand that boy a joint, or would hand him a bottle of whiskey with the seal on it, would hand him a needle, would hand him a gun, would introduce him to a white trick, We got a community full of depraved, lost, reprobate black folk who need a savior and need to be saved. And if a savior did come to us, half of us would try to kill him if the whites didn't like him.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Sharp. We have some more questions. Brother Kareem, did you have any other questions for Dr. Sharp before we move on?
Not at this point, no. I'm gonna be on the line. I'm not going anywhere.
Okay, all right. Well, your mic is live, so anytime. Okay, we're going to take a question from area code 919. Area code 919, your mic is live.
How are you doing?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm great. I just want to know your stance. My name is John Paul.
Hi, John. Yes, sir.
I just want to know you guys' stance on interracial marriage and the division it's causing in the black community. Do you see it as a division?
Okay. Are you asking me or are you asking Dr. Short?
Dr. Short, and I'd like to get your opinion on it as well.
Interracial marriage?
Yes.
Well, you know, I'll tell you like the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan said, that love supersedes all things. Is it something that I would refer or prefer? No, it's not. Not for black people in particularly, because we have a struggle with our own identity. So a lot of times, and oft times more than we care to even own up to, we involve ourselves in interracial marriages because we are dissatisfied with ourselves or we don't love ourselves. So we gravitate to what we think is better. Now, if two people are together because they truly, truly love one another, and it's beyond color, and it's beyond the texture of the hair, and it's beyond what the children are going to look like as a result of us being together, then that's fine. I mean, all praise is due to Allah. God is not in opposition of love, if it's true love. But in order for you to have true love, you have to first love yourself. So it depends on the purpose of the person who is involving themselves in the interracial relationship. Because like I said, oftentimes more than we care to admit, we cross that line of color or race for a whole different reason, and love has nothing to do with it. But I will at this time let Dr. Short answer your question if you care to comment on John's question, Dr. Short.
Thank you. I don't think that there's only one race. It's the human race. Now, having said that, actually it's kind of insulting, even if it's not meant to be that way, for the people who've been forcibly mixed with others to have to give an answer about people being involved with people in other groups. It's really, forgive me, insulting. Why isn't this asked to the other people, okay? And why is even this an issue put before us as diverse as we are? And so, I mean, it's rude because folks don't go to the Republican Convention or the Democratic Convention or the John Birch Society or to the Roman Catholic Church and start talking about the term you use, interracial marriage. It's insulting. There's only one race, and there's among the most mixed people in this country are people of African American descent, and much of that mixture against our will or because we have no sense of identity, which was necessary to enslave people. So to ask people who scuffle to even have a sense of their humanity, what do you think about sleeping with people who abused you, done genocide on you, killed the different races that you are, the different ethnic groups. I'm part Native American. I'm part Jew. I'm part German. I'm part British. I'm part Scotch. I'm part Lithuanian. And I'm also Hausa, Hausa Fulani. I'm Teke, Balanta, Ibibio, Piscatwa, Cherokee, Powhatan, Seminole. And I don't even know it all. So when someone comes and asks me about mixing, it seems obscene and absurd to talk to a people who, by the way, we look like we do, but what we look like doesn't necessarily define who and what we are, because if you do a DNA research in the Chesapeake, where my family's from, 50% of what you call black people, their DNA says they're white. So it's obscene, and it's insulting, and it's unscientific, and in fact, it's racist to call the victims of forced mixing, to ask us, now that we've had really just 48 years of being able to choose of who we're going to be with, and of those 48 years, only 46 years if you want to be with someone white, we didn't make the laws against it. So why are we, the ruled, ask questions that need to be directed to the rulers? Why do they need caste? Why do they need scientific racism? Why are they talking to us about interracial marriage when they're pushing Depo-Provera and Gardasil, and they're giving black women hysterectomies and sterilizing them like they did my cousin Elaine Riddick in 1968, and they're just now going to give $10 million and they've been sterilized, and preventing us who may not want to be with whites from having children, and yet they're encouraging us to have children with other people. Are they trying to destroy us? The answer is yes.
You know
they're
what, Doctor?
They're trying to destroy us.
That's what I wanted you to say. That's my problem with interracial relationships. You said it early. It caused us to lose our identity. And once we lose our identity, there's no unity. Black unity starts with the black man and the black woman. That's where it starts. So if you divide those two, you divide the unity.
Exactly. This is what they want. And it's not
they're
like that.
I'm
going to
give
you
a prime example. I'm going to give you a prime example of how that works. Now, if you think about it, really think about this here, with the Trayvon Martin case. There are so many blacks that are mixed up in interracial relationships now. Nobody wants to stand up. They
like
don't
Trayvon Martin.
They white side of the family. And
I bet you Trayvon Martin's dad's girlfriend is a white woman. Have you noticed? She's never been anywhere this whole time.
Wow. You know what? I haven't noticed that. That's
and they were in a gated community. And when you look at Trayvon Martin's mother, when she's with Trayvon Martin's dad, like she doesn't even want to be there. I mean, she looks pissed.
Yes.
She looks real angry.
Okay, gentlemen,
so,
I don't want to be rude, and I don't want to interrupt, but we don't want to get off a topic. We're talking about Malcolm Shabazz, and I understand it's a very passionate issue, but we want to stay on topic. And, of course, we've had our Trayvon Martin shows, and we will again, and so we will be able to discuss it in detail. But at this time, I want to take other questions because we have other people holding. But, John, thank you for your question, and I hope that we answered you. Sufficiently.
You did. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Thank you for listening. Okay, we have another question from area code 813. Your mic is live. 813-443.
Assalamu alaikum.
Oh, wa alaikum salam. How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine. How you doing, Sister Soldier Queen?
I am blessed by Allah's grace and permission. Who is this? I'm sorry, forgive me.
This is Brother Ronnie.
Brother Ronnie, yes.
Yes,
how
ma'am.
Are you? This is our host for Young, Gifted, and Black. How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine, sister. And yourself?
I'm well. Thank you for asking. Do you have a question, Brother Ronnie?
Yes, ma'am. I had one question for Malcolm X, and I also wanted to just say one thing about the interracial marriage, that, a black man is the original man, and the original man cannot reproduce himself by integrating with any other color, because you know, one thing as parents you want to see in your children is yourself. You want to pass on yourself, you know, in your beauty. And you cannot do that if you integrate with any other color, or you get what I'm saying? Like, in order to reproduce yourself, you have to reproduce yourself with yourself. And God sees every man and every woman and child as man, all three as one man. And so we all are different races. Like Brother Short was saying, that we are the same race, but yes, God made one first. And so that first one cannot reproduce itself unless he stays within his family. And so and that's all I had to say about that. But on the Malcolm X side, I wanted to say, why do you think Malcolm X, what reason did he finally go against the Nation of Islam, and why was he silenced? What is your opinion on it?
You know, I want to stay topical, but I'm going to just say this to you. The FBI and Blasi and the New York police tried to murder Malcolm X in the 1950s. They came to his house and shot his house up. And they managed to survive and go to court and sue the New York police for trying to kill him. Most people ignore that. Initially, they tried to just kill him white on black, and that failed. Mm-hmm. The FBI and Blasi deliberately, Blasi is the basically the CIA of New York City, which still operates today. They put people, they lied and they perverted the people and had them go into the Nation of Islam to hurt the Honorable Elijah followers in his movement. And among the greatest followers was Malcolm X. And they deliberately instigated conflict between different people in the nation, and had nothing to do with the Honorable Elijah Muhammad's relationship with Malcolm X. This had everything to do with paid by operatives, traitors, Benedict Arnold, Judas Ghost, and other people who should be strung up if they're still living right now. And Malcolm got caught up in a COINTEL plot against him and the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and our whole people. And Malcolm made the he thought he needed to make, because he had been steered one way, and those people who were in there working against the nation and working against everything that was good were working within the Nation of Islam like termites, trying to kill a movement that had lifted up our people, that had helped our people, had created businesses for our people and dignity for our people. And this devil sent these people in there. And forgive me, I'm getting angry, because I resent people acting like it's just the nation and it's not these devils that sent those people in. It wasn't the good people who loved the Lamb, who loved Elijah Muhammad and what was being taught, that did that. These were people who were sent in to destroy the nation, and thank God they failed, but we lost some people. And I'd like to stop this talk, because it's missing the point that we had someone who could have reconciled the relationship that was attacked by those devils back in the 50s and 60s. When they failed to kill them with white men, they used black men that were white on the inside, who were more like Yaqub than Yaqub himself. How could you have someone like the Honorable Elijah Muhammad talk to you, or some of the other people, or Malcolm X talk to you and break down what's going on, and you still let yourself be used to do this to another black person? You have to be full of the devil.
Yes, sir.
So,
and I don't. And thank you, Brother Ronnie, for your question. And you know, really, I'm not going to talk about Malcolm X and the nation, but I'm just saying for those of us who are in the nation and as it relates to our history, you know, it's past time now that we stop saying that we don't know or we don't understand, and we have to teach our children that the division that was caused, as Dr. Short so beautifully explained, the division between the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and Malcolm X was
right.
The same division that they've used throughout the history. They call
That's
it
right.
COINTELPRO under J. Edgar Hoover. They're calling it something else today. Whatever.
Right.
It's the same plot that they've always used. So for, and we not going to, you know, when we say that, you know, Malcolm left the nation and he turned on the nation, you have to understand that certain situations were created. That's just
That's
like
right.
if I come and tell you something bad about your mother, you know, and I say your mother said she hated you and she wish she had killed you in the womb, you going to come back and look at your mother differently. So it's the same situation. So
yes,
and for us to be 50 years after the fact still talking about the division between Malcolm and the nation, we know now, intelligently we know, that that was a setup. That was a setup to create that division. And unfortunately, here we are 48 years after the death of Malcolm, and we still, you know, not sure about what happened, but we've had evidence for 400 years of what has happened.
That's right.
And
that's right.
It's not going to stop until we stop it, until we unify, till we cannot, we won't allow people to infiltrate. That's
yes,
when
ma'am.
It will end. So for us to say that we don't know, and I'm not talking about you, Brother Ronnie. I'm not talking about you because, baby, you're 25 years old. I'm not talking about you. But I'm saying that there are others who will still act like they don't know. And I'm one. I
yes,
don't have
ma'am.
Patience for that because we know
yes,
better.
Ma'am.
We
and,
know better.
And I know exactly what you're saying. And, because I know that for a fact that it was a setup and that, you know, it was planned and this was, you know, devils coming down on God's chosen people and using them and deceiving them. And I'm exactly aware of that, and I just asked the question because I don't know, Allah, you know, gave me that question to ask, you know, just to see what brother... You know, just to see what brother answer would be, and you know, and I just thank y'all for, you know, having this discussion and, you know, talking about brother, and you know, because a lot of people don't, you know, give him the acknowledgement that he deserved, because I actually looked up to him and he was my hero as a little child and coming up, and that's one of the reasons, he is one of the reasons why I joined the Nation of Islam and am a student of Islam today, because he was my hero back in the day, and I never knew who taught him the things that he knew, and never knew you know, why he was such a you know, piercing person when he talked to the audience, and why he was so acknowledgeable,
mm-hmm.
why he was so strong and educated. And so I found out where he was getting, where that source came from, and you know, fortunately I got a chance to join. Yes, ma'am.
All praises due to Allah. Yes, sir.
Yes, ma'am. Allahu Akbar.
Allahu Akbar. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam.
Wa alaikum salam, Brother James.
May I just make a statement regarding this issue and regarding the ongoing, you know, nonsense that tries to cast the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan and the Nation of Islam as the culprits responsible for the assassination of Malcolm X. You know, those
uh-huh.
who have that mindset today, I want you to consider things. Whenever a crime takes place and that crime remains unsolved over extended periods of time, well, one of the first things that any investigator attempts to identify is motive. And motive is wrapped in what and who becomes the beneficiary of the crime. So who benefits by making the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan guilty or having some culpability as along with the nation for the death of Malcolm X? If we look at the scenarios surrounding Malcolm X, whenever he is publicized, whenever the media allows a movie or TV series or anything to be shown about Malcolm, in the synopsis of that particular show or documentary, Malcolm is now referred to as a civil rights leader or a civil rights activist, which is ridiculous. But they are attempting to sanitize Malcolm's image. They never loved Malcolm in the past, and they didn't love, and they don't love him now. They put his face on a stamp. Can you imagine the hypocrisy of that? That's to placate the ignorant.
Well, no, they put a stamp on the stamp for the SSI checks and the food stamps. That's to make fun of us in dependency and being enslaved. Oh, look, we got one of yours that we killed on this thing. See, we're not so bad. I mean, of course, it's hypocrisy and it's genocide. It's like having a deer's head hang in the hall of your house like you like deers when you shot it. Or naming a team for a group of Indians that have been wiped out.
Devil. That's right. That's my whole point. That's the point that I'm trying to illustrate now. I just wanted to share something with those who might still be of that mindset. Unfortunately, there are young people who have really a partial, truncated, and false history.
You mean Spike Lee. They had to kick him off the James Brown movie, a Spike Lee image of who Malcolm X is.
Right. Well, I just I don't wish to beat up on anyone or denigrate anyone, so I'm speaking in general terms. What I want to do, what I'm attempting to do, is just to offer to those who are of that mindset, and particularly the young who, of no fault of their own, think like that. Again, look at the beneficiaries of those who would assassinate Malcolm X. Who's going to benefit? Is the nation going to benefit?
No.
Of course not. If we study the history of Malcolm, we'll see that he was, at his time, the number one anti-Semite. Even as they castigate and excoriate the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan and assign him that distinction. Well, Malcolm had the same assignation. He had the same designation. He had the same distinction of being the number one anti-Semite. The bottom line is they didn't love Malcolm. They don't love the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. They don't like any black man or woman or child that would stand up and serve potentially as that messiah that the counterintelligence program was designed to stop the rise of.
That's right.
Well, that's,
right.
That's
and
the
you know, and
that I'm attempting to make. Thank you.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Brother Jay. And, you know, and that's my whole point for doing this show. Because I understand what you said, Brother Randy, about, you know, not just any particular legacy of any particular family. However, what has been evident is that I know that, just using as an example, Dr. King's family, Yogi, as we affectionately called her, Bernice, she went on to participate in the ministry. Dexter did whatever he did. And, of course, Martin Jr., he did some things in the community. But this family, more so than any other, because not only did they kill the men in the family, but they tortured the women of the family.
And I'm talking about all of the women. Betty Shabazz and all six of her girls have fallen victim to what they call COINTELPRO. And so what I'm saying to the people is this. I'm saying that we as a people, we can't look at this as this is another tragedy, this is another Martin Luther King, this is another Malcolm X, because, see, Malcolm X's grandchildren will have children. And inshallah, their children will have children. But what it seems to be like to me is that they are telling us that no black male will rise from the legacy of Malcolm X or Earl Little because of the impact and the influence that they have on black people. Malcolm can move people. And when you have someone like that and they pose a danger to the white man's plan, we can't sit back and say, oh, it's unfortunate, oh, this is another black leader falling. We have to stand up just like we should stand up for Trayvon Martin when they're killing our babies in the street. But we didn't stand up for Benny and Quibella and all of them as they have tortured them throughout the duration of time since the death of Malcolm X. Some of us don't even know what that family has been through. But it's very harsh. It's very harsh. It's beyond harsh. It's just downright evil for you to torture the family, the grandchildren, of a man that you hated. What does that say about you? And then, if we allow it, what does it say about us? So we can't act like we all don't know what has gone on with the family of Malcolm X. But now look at the last male heir, and who knows when we are to get another one. Will we protect the legacy of Malcolm X? That's my point. We have a responsibility as a people to let others know that we have to stand together in unison, that we will stand for our people. But that's the reason why they kill us, because of the division amongst us.
That's right.
If we would act as enraged when we kill one another, then they would be afraid to kill us.
That's right.
But when we kill one another, you know, it's all right. You know, little Pojo, Nook Nook Nim, they gone, you know, pour out some liquor for my friends. That's how we act when we lose one of our own. Until a white man kills them, then we want to get all crazy. But now this is pure harassment. This is a manhunt on this family. This is a manhunt that has spanned generations. And something has to be done. We can't do anything about Earl Little, Malcolm X, and Malcolm Shabazz, but we can do something about those that are to be born in the future. We have to let this government know that we see clearly your agenda for the legacy of Malcolm X, and it is not to be tolerated. And if Dexter and Martin and Bernice and Yoki had got out there and tried to do anything similar to what their father had done, they'd been gone too.
That's right, sis. And this is why the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, that's all right. Don't get calm, just because you're speaking the absolute truth. This is why the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan stated in his 23rd installment of The Time and What Must Be Done that he was issuing an SOS to all black leaders and organizations and black people in general. We have to make an all-out effort in unity to save our youth. Our youth are the target. They're not concerned necessarily with those of us who are of some age, although they're concerned with anybody, since they have yet Well, now, I can't say that they haven't identified the Messiah. I think they got their eye on him right now.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact is, mm-hmm. they're concerned with the youth. They know Scripture. They know that it was Joshua that led the people, the children of Israel, into the promised land. They know what happened to the old heads who refused to go in and take the land that God had promised them under the leadership of Moses. They know Scripture, they know prophecy, and they know that the children will inherit the promised land. So they got their eye on all black children, particularly black children who have Islam in them. And when I say Islam, of course, I mean all Islam, but with specific and particular concern and emphasis on the Nation of Islam, and Islam as taught by the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad through the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. So you're right on, sister. You don't have to calm down. In fact, we should get excited. And I hope, your excitement and others excites others. Not to do anything foolish, but to understand the gravity of the situation, the severity of the situation.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's all. I just wanted to back you up in your excitement there, sister.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you. And Dr. Shaw, I want to, because I know you know, I don't like to follow the media because it's so inaccurate, but I know that you had the privilege of speaking with Brother Malcolm. So can you expound for us on two things, his trip to Iran, and what was he doing in Mexico?
Yeah, I want to say one thing before. I've sent you via Facebook a petition that friends of Malcolm Shabazz, and I believe it would be one of the greatest manifestations of love if some of the people in the nation could help us get that petition moved all over the Internet. We want a 500,000. We don't care what they do, but we want them to know that they're people that care. I already have felt more love for this boy from the nation than any place else. Quote me.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And if that makes people mad at me, I've been out here trying to get truth for him. Y'all have stepped up. I won't say any more than that. Y'all have stepped up. God bless you all for this. Now let's talk about these trips. Iran, he was supposed to go to the Hollywoodism conference where they talk about Zionism and Hollywood, and Malcolm and I were supposed to do a panel together dealing with the human rights condition of African Americans. Okay. I can tell you what happened to me, because I was on the same trip. I believe that there's some infiltration of enemies everywhere. That's why, forgive me, I almost started crying. I almost got emotional on the Duke, because I'm tired of this fighting, especially when people don't understand how deep the devil can be, okay? You know what I mean when I say devil.
Yes, and, absolutely.
They've infiltrated people in Iran, too. So someone sent me a ticket with my name and another person's name on the same ticket, and we were different sexes. You understand, had I gone to the gate with that, I would have been in jail probably right now, because they'd want to know, what am I trying to do going to Iran with a ticket with two names on it? You understand what I'm saying? They were also trying to get us to buy visas, and I went down and I raised hell with the cultural ministry person that Malcolm is not to buy. If any of us isn't going to buy one, definitely not him. I'm about to stay here, but y'all not going to make us pay for a visa to visit your country, and then they say we trade with the enemy, then they jail us. I said, you know they'll jail this kid. If you do not understand, let me make you understand. And I raised hell, because I did not want Malcolm to go on the trip, not because I was against him, I was afraid. He worked with us, we did that movie. You've seen the film, The Facade of the American Dream. It's on YouTube. That made, and I'll quit. And I had said that it would be an international problem if Malcolm traveled. It was in my spirit, and I said, sir, you know, if you have to stand, you can push Malcolm free to go on this trip. You see, Malcolm to go to come. And,
Dr. Randy, you're breaking up again. I'm sorry. Your phone is breaking up.
They're messing with my phone, love. I'm doing the best I can.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Now?
Go ahead. I hear you fine.
Malcolm wanted to go to Qom and do Islamic studies. His family did not want him to go. His mother found someone to sponsor a school for him to go to here in the United States where everything would be paid for. But Malcolm had talked to Marzia Hashemi, who's a correspondent with Press TV. She's a friend of mine. If you go to YouTube, there's a film called The Facade of the American Dream. Facade spelled F-A-C-A-D-E, The Facade of the American Dream. And Malcolm was in that as well. I had told Marzia, if Malcolm went to Iran, or if he tried to go, there would be a problem. And she said she had it covered. And I says, well, okay, you're saying that, but I told her, look, sister, I'm going to be the one that has to clean up the restroom at McDonald's after all the tour buses leave. That was the quote, because I felt like there'd be a big mess, and I would be in doo-doo, and I would be stuck with the doo-doo because that would be my job. So I called Malcolm, said, Malcolm, you know, this is going to be a problem. And Malcolm says, I've got to go. I've got to turn my life around. I've got to make the change. I've got to go now. I said, okay, God bless you. I have my issues with it, but I'm going to do my blocking for you because I want you to be happy. Okay, so I went into blocking. Now, what happened? Malcolm having a criminal record that the state caused, admit it was hard for him to find work, and he was behind in child support payments. He had a child with this white girl who would write him when he was incarcerated. She had the police looking for him. And just about the same time that Malcolm got his visa, that's when the police picked him up. All right? So you've got, there was FBI harassment or police harassment of Malcolm going back several months. It could be both and either or. Understand with the war on terror, they all work together. It doesn't matter what you call them, Homeland Security, ICE, police. They all share database and information, so they're all in on what happens. Do you understand what I'm saying? So Malcolm got picked up at this conspicuous time, okay, and word got out that someone sent word to, I believe, someone in California who sent word to Iran that Malcolm had been picked up by the FBI because there had been a lot of harassment of Malcolm all last summer, 2012. Okay? So when I heard the FBI, I was asked to confirm it by Marzia, who called me over in Iran. And that was Super Bowl Sunday, and I freaked out because it said, what a great day to kill somebody black and important, Super Bowl Sunday. Everybody black is watching TV. I mean, we wouldn't care if you killed Jesus. Or you could dig Martin Luther King up and shoot him with a bazooka on Super Bowl Sunday. Everybody wanted to see Beyonce shake. So I was nervous. I called several different people that were Muslim because I didn't know Malcolm's aunt. And I had deliberately kept my distance because I wanted Malcolm to know I was friends to him for him not to get too close to anybody to get anything. I think that's how he trusted me. It's clear. If I like you, I like you for who you are, not for what I can get out of you. I called someone, a man who's a Wahhabi imam in D.C. who knew Ilyasa. And they never made the call. I tried to reach the family to find out what they wanted me to do, or did they know what had happened with Malcolm? I never heard anything. I called Peter Bailey. I called Suleiman Yang, different people trying to find someone that could get the family to tell me something, because the people from Press TV said, you know, this is something that is serious. When I didn't hear from people after several hours, when Press TV's newsroom director called me, I told him, I don't want Malcolm's, the grandson of Malcolm X's blood, his blood on my hands if I don't say something. Somebody has him, something's wrong, and I don't want to be one of those people that didn't do anything. And the worst case scenario, the family will be mad at me, but I've got to cover my brother. Run the story. Let's cover our brother and expose these bastards before they do something to hurt him. And that's how that thing started running on television. And in a nutshell, I mean, I guess I've reconciled some of the family members because I didn't do that to embarrass them. I was worried. You know, like you, sister, I know all the people in this family that have been killed. I didn't want that to happen with me not doing anything. So I went for it. And I do the same thing if it were you or the brother on the line. We have to stop letting things happen to each other. And
right.
In the case of Mexico, I talked to Malcolm on the 26th of April. That same day, Alvita King, her father was A.D. King, who was assassinated in 1969, and she's the oldest child of the King family of that generation, okay? She had told me that day that Coretta Scott King had been murdered by the people in the hospital taking care of her. She had diabetes. They were deliberately giving Mrs. King lots of sugar to help kill her. And on the same day, I talked to Malcolm, and Malcolm had agreed to work with Alvita King, that we were going to work together around fighting against eugenics and the drug companies poisoning our kids with the psychotropic drugs and Depo-Provera and other things I felt would be very helpful for improving the audience and the crowd of people that Malcolm had relevance to, as well as helping folks who are sort of right-wing but don't want black folks to die out, to be able to reach younger blacks. And I talked to Malcolm for several hours. I begged him not to travel. I told him in particular to leave white holes alone. I didn't use the word hole. Yes, we're very honest with each other. I told him to stay in the country. There were people who would hurt him. Don't go anywhere without calling me. And we talked for hours. And then he called me a few days later, asked me about some money. I told him, Malcolm, man, I'm poor. Like on the 4th of April or the 3rd of April, one or the other, I think the Saturday, let me see, he died on the 9th. Let me see if I count this. If this is, I think he called me on the 4th. On the 4th, he sent me a Facebook communication. And he told me he was in Mexico. I went into deep depression for 3 days. And because I didn't even put it all together. On the 4th day, I woke up and I had called people. I called Alvita King and Reverend Pinckney and Benton Harbor and said, I think somebody's done something to hurt Malcolm. He's in Mexico. I didn't want him to go anywhere, and I'm afraid. And so I just asked everybody to pray. Somebody's hurt my friend or something. I just knew. I was with Pam Africa and her husband, Razakhan, the people from the MOVE and the Mumia people. And we were out eating. I was in a restaurant, saw a picture of Malcolm X, and it looked like he was crying. It upset me so much when I got to sit down with my food with Pam and Razakhan, I started talking about Malcolm being in danger and that something bad was going to happen, and he was too far away. I didn't know anybody that could help him, and the trip was all horrible. It should have never happened. When we got to 125th and Martin Luther King, Nellie Hester Bailey, who's an activist and writes for Black Agenda Report, they announced he was dead. Now, what happened was, between the time Malcolm called and asked me for money by phone the last time, some people, two fake people, but Malcolm had probably been lured by some people to get a hookup for them to do a recording or to get money to do a recording. Malcolm went to L.A. He didn't have the money. I don't know how he got it. And I think he ran into a guy with the last name Ruiz who looked like a thug, and a guy named Miguel Suarez. They're in a fake front group called RUMEC, which is supposed to be a union group that fights for the right of Latino construction workers. Think about that when you think about all the black men you never see working in construction, and they're worried about it. And look at how many Latinos you see in construction. You think if anyone needs rights, we need the right to even get some of the jobs. But needless to say, Malcolm was driven to Mexico by Miguel's mother, whose name is Carmen Mesa. Carmen Mesa. She works with the Royal something cookware. She works. It's a group out of San Jose. She sells cookware. And I'm forgetting the middle term for Royal Prestige cookware in San Jose. They took Malcolm there, and then Malcolm and Miguel took a bus, and then it gets murky. I do know that a gentleman who is in who's in the Bay Area, according to Iyasa Shabazz, a gentleman by the name of Cleveland Del Rey Jr., also known as JR, who writes for the Bayview and has several things that he does. He called and gave the incorrect information about how Malcolm died in Tijuana. That's the origin of these confused stories. He kept calling a journalist at the Amsterdam News, and she would put it out or tweet it out or whatever she was doing, and he would tell her, you got it wrong, and the details would change. Remember, there was a succession of different stories. It didn't make sense. First he was thrown off a building, then he was shot, thrown off a building, then he was thrown off a building and shot, then he was just shot, then he was just beaten. It was just every inevitable thing. And that was dramatically to get people to not care because you couldn't get a clear story. You heard it was a barroom brawl, and you heard about naked women running and a gun going off and all of this. And this guy, Miguel Suarez, it's one thing that can be proven. He is a liar when he says that he took Malcolm to the hospital in a taxi cab. Malcolm was taken to the hospital. He was found by a night watchman or worker at a nearby building, groaning in a gutter, and he was taken to a hospital there. He died the following day. These people did not come back and get Malcolm. And by the way, it's alleged that Miguel was leaving the country because he was deported. Now, we haven't been able to find evidence of whether this guy was deported or not. We haven't been able to find out, you know, there's even a guy who looks just like him who was in the Marines that wanted to be in the CIA. There's something very murky going on, sister. We need to remember that President Obama was in Mexico just about the same time as Malcolm. It's very interesting, okay? And so something's going on, and I'm very curious as to who let the guy, JR, know that Malcolm had died. Why did he know hours before this was certified by the U.S. Embassy? Who told him? And there are a lot of people in independent black radio and media that are friends with JR. So this is another reason the story hasn't come out, because people have been protecting their relationship with this brother. I'm not saying anything other than he got a story, he put the story out, the story constantly changed, and then only after myself and other people confronting him over Facebook did he give a statement that he hadn't even met these two guys before Ruiz and Suarez, and yet he had done radio shows with them in Oakland. So there's a series of untruths that don't make sense to me, because this Bayview paper has done a whole spread showing how much JR loved Malcolm. If you love someone that much, wouldn't you tell everything you could tell to find justice? It hasn't happened. And JR has friends with a lot of black politicians and activists. Now,
wasn't Cynthia McKinney with him on that trip? I was supposed to be with him on that trip.
Folks need to ask her I'm not trying to do anything to harm anybody's reputation. It's a great question. It's a great question. Malcolm went to Libya with Cynthia and JR and a girl, I forget the girl's name, Rashida. They were all from the Bay Area. And so Cynthia knew some of them. You would think she stood up to government, stood up to president. This seems like small potatoes to say something. I don't know if much has been said. Early on, I saw a statement or two, but nothing too detailed. I would say this. People really need to lean on all black figures to ask them to say and do something about this and all the other slaying, all the other killing, the stop and frisk, the silence of all of them, those who are in office and those that are out. So I will say this to you. Fred Hampton Jr. wrote a report. It's online. If people want it and they can't find it, they can write me, wrandyshort@gmail.com. I'll find it and email it to you. Fred Hampton and others, I talked to a gentleman who was a former Panther in the Bay Area. He said many of the older people are very concerned about JR, whether they have evidence or anything like that. But, yes, there's been a lot of strange things in this gentleman's career. Malcolm's death not being the first death in which he somehow connected. If you recall, the Nation of Islam got set up and drawn into a conflict with Chauncey Bailey out on the West Coast. He was the instigator of that. He helped instigate some of what happened. So Fred Hampton Jr. would gladly come on your program and talk to you about it. Fred Hampton Jr. sent something to Malcolm's mother. Malcolm's mother called my uncle Peter Bailey, who was Malcolm X's editor. And Mr. Bailey cussed me out last July and told me to get JR away from Malcolm. I'm on the East Coast. I don't hang with people on the West Coast. He still cussed me out, so I called Cynthia up and said, Cynthia, are you sure this brother's okay? Because, you know, Malcolm's mother has been through hell and back, and Mr. Bailey's been through hell and back, and they're very upset. And essentially, she told me there was nothing to it. It was all ill-founded. There was no problem, no danger, nothing. And I said, fine, sister, but if anything happens to anyone, I'll remind you that I reached out to you as a concerned follower, because she's like a leader for me, and say, didn't I, like, say we should check this just for our own, you know, can't we look? And so something has happened, so I'm very curious as to the, hasn't been a whole lot said or done. I do know that they have some working relationship. I do know that in the past there have been some sort of collaboration on speaking engagements. JR is known for being very good with PR. So and that's speculative. I can't prove that. I think that's the case. But, you know, at some point people are going to have to ask everyone. And I've been very transparent because I was with Malcolm. We did movies. I helped set up TV shows and other things for him. I wanted to be out in the open that I wasn't using him for his grandfather's name. All right, I've done my best to let him know there was love there for him. And so and I'm not getting rich. You're not paying me. I'm getting more grief and maybe a death threat here or two. But nobody, this is about, I wanted always show something to honor Malcolm and Betty Chavez. If I could do something for this brother, I told him to his face in this kitchen where I'm standing, I've always wanted to shine his grandfather's shoes or do something to say thank you at least one time to let him know I learned what you said, I learned what you were trying, you know, and I told him that's why no matter how mad he make me sometimes, I have to remember this isn't just for him, it's as unto God and as unto the ancestor that gave everything for us. The least we could do is have a little patience. We imagine what his life would have been like had his grandfather been a selfish bourgeois Negro and let us suffer. and he didn't do that, and the risk was what might happen to his family. So we should have stepped in and been family to the survivors, for Medgar Evers, for all of them. And people need to step up. Charles Rangel can step up. These Black Congress people could step up. That's why we have that petition. I need to let you know we're having a march tomorrow. We're marching on the Mexican
embassy. Right, in D.C.
They've refused to talk to us. They know something. I mean, let me explain to you that Malcolm got killed 2 years to the day before after 2 years to the day. A Nigerian man was beaten to death by police, and they framed two other people and put them in jail like 2-3 days. The same thing happened with Malcolm. There's an allegation from Malcolm's aunt, Malak, that they stole the boy's organs. There's a lot of very strange things that happen, and I'm wondering if they stole organs out of the last African man, and did they take Malcolm X's grandson's organs? I don't know. But the boy was beaten, was tortured. That was an act of genocide, what they did. And the fact that there have been people for the last month and a half, the people in the Citizens Committee for the Defense of the of Naturalized Afro-Mexicanos, led by Wilner Metellus, I'm sorry, they've been fighting, and you know, the police maybe 2 weeks ago just came and began beating them savagely. 1,000 police attacked unarmed, nonviolent demonstrators, tore up their banners. They even used a nightstick to beat a 4-year-old. What do they know? What do they know? And I reached out to the American Embassy. They wouldn't even write me back. It all of a sudden disappeared. That's why I called you, asked about the FBI, sister. And since like everywhere you go, I have a friend who works for ABC, who's the anchor for ABC, asked, could he put a story on Malcolm? He was told, no, he couldn't do it. All over, people told they can't. This isn't a story that people can do. Now, we know there's some things involved. There's a systematic plan to replace African-Americans with Latinos. We can see that. We already knew that. If they wake up our people that these folks who are white in the census and they think they're white run around calling themselves Spanish, I'm not mad at people for being from wherever they are, but if they come here hate my guts, that's another wave of folks to deal with. They are letting these people do all kinds of things. They're killing us in prisons. They're the best allies of the Aryan nations to kill blacks. They use the Mexicans. It's just very simple what's happening. Malcolm's death, as the brother asked, what's his legacy? His death is going to unify us once we realize that what happened to him can happen to all of us. And it doesn't have to be a Klansman. Be Jorge or Jorge or Santiago can lynch you just as fast as Billy Bob. And this is the plan. If you remember when George Bush was president, the President Vicente Fox of Mexico said basically in so many words, replace all your lazy blacks with our people. We want those jobs. And they never said anything. They let those folks come over. How come you need to learn how to speak Spanish to work a job in an English-speaking place? And they're allowed to speak Spanish in a place that requires English. If you speak Spanish and English, if you don't speak Spanish as well as them, you still aren't qualified. This language thing is a systematic thing to punish our people. And I know the Mexicans are afraid, and what we really need to do is start talking about you down in Texas. Y'all need to boycott them. They've been useless to you guys since they were declared white in the 50s to justify the continued segregation of schools in the state of Texas. And no, I'm not mad, and I'm not out to get people. It's none of that. It's about the fact that African-American people have a right to exist. And I resent the fact that people identify as white when they're beating us up and everything else, but they identify as non-white when they see we've got something and they demand half, like they get down with us like that. It's time for us to have a sense of who and what we are. And in Mexico, they don't even count blacks in the census. Blacks aren't even counted, and yet it's blacks that started Mexican nationalism. Go figure. We get the country free, and they bring over white folks and keep us at the bottom. Sound familiar? It's the same mess. And they black folks down in Mexico, discriminate against black folks in Mexico, and if our people ever wake up to that, we're going to start fighting. Why the DREAM Act? They're closing down all the black schools in the city and our black colleges, and then you have a DREAM Act? to give everybody education that came to the country legally to replace you? Wow. And we've got stupid black Democrats, or actually Shimocrats, because all they fight for now is gay people. And they fight for pedophilia, too, in case you didn't know that. Once APA-approved pedophilia normal, the NAACP and the Congressional Black Caucus can start fighting for the rights of pedophiles to get the money. And if you don't believe me, Congressman Alcee Hastings has already made the case on the floor of Congress that pedophiles needed to be, if somebody bothers pedophiles, they need to be protected from hate acts. So if you catch a pedophile messing with your kid and you whoop their ass, you're a Klansman or a Nazi, not the pedophile who's a racist telling, hey, nigga, get suck this. You beat him up, you go to jail. The same way they put Trayvon Martin on trial for getting murdered.
Yes, sir, I know that. I already heard about that one. Okay, we have about 9 more minutes, and we have a couple of questions out of the chat room for you, Dr. Short. And they wanted to know what was the goal of Malcolm Shabazz? Was he going to be like his grandfather and preach Islam?
As I answered that earlier, Malcolm wanted to go to Qom and study and be deeper in his Islamic faith. We had one conversation back in April, basically a year, 360-some-odd days before he died. 364 days before he died, he was telling me that he wanted to recreate the OAAU.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, that could be a motivation. Okay. So, listen, before we head out, Brother James, are you still there?
Yes, ma'am. I'm still here.
Okay. Did you have a comment that you wanted to make before we close for the evening?
No, not at all. No, I don't.
Okay.
Just, again, I want to thank Brother for edifying us with this information. There's a lot I've learned this evening that I didn't know. Thank you, dear brother.
God bless you.
Okay. And Brother Kareem, did you have a question?
Yes, and actually I have just a short comment based upon what everything that has been shared. I also, again, want to thank the brother, for, like I say, introducing me to information that I was not aware of. You know, it puts things in better perspective for me. And the short thing that I wanted to share before we leave is the fact that when he mentioned about, you know, it's been mentioned about Jesus, and we talk about Jesus and his crucifixion. And what we have to understand is that every time one of our leaders or potential leaders is murdered, whether they be male or female, that's Jesus on the cross. You know, nobody's coming to save us like that. If we don't stand up and save ourselves, I mean, it's over. We need to see that. I mean, this is why what's going on constantly happens. You know, and as always, I want to thank you for bringing a subject that's both timely and very, very necessary.
Oh, thank you, Brother Kareem. Well, you know, before we go, I just want to tell, you know, I just want to put this out there. I am so, and I don't know where it's coming from, but it's just coming. I am so, even more so after hearing you, Dr. Short, I am so disturbed by the death of this young man, and it may be late or whatever the case may be, because it's almost like somebody turned on a light. And, you know, this was clearly intentional. And I guess I'm angry at us because, you know, like the minister has always instructed us, that we are not to beat up on our people, we are not to condemn our people, and he's absolutely right. I would never go against what he says. However, and I don't mean that as a dismissal, but however, it's past time that we start to implement the change that we say we desire. Because if we don't stand up and be one voice, if we don't stand up and become involved in our communities, that's where it starts, in your own community. Don't you know that they're going to continue to kill us? And the thing about it is that, see, we don't feel the impact until it comes to our neighborhood. But know that it's in a black neighborhood every day of the week. Just because it's not around the corner from you today, it doesn't mean that you as a people are not affected. But as soon as something happens in your neighborhood, you want to call attention to it. But it's happening all over the country, and we need to call attention to it. But more so than deaths like Brother Malcolm Shabazz, the ones that you hear about on the news every day. The young brother and the young sister that is gunned down in your street. I'm sorry, that are gunned down in your street every day. That we don't become enraged about. This white man is not gonna stop killing us until we, number one, stop killing ourselves, and number two, start standing up as a unit, as a force, as a people that happen to give a damn about their own people. Because as long as we demonstrate that we do not, you can certainly believe that they're going to be comfortable and they're going to continue to create situations and programs and write policies to put us and our babies in the ground. We have a responsibility. It don't matter what happened between the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and Malcolm X and the Nation of Islam 50-something years ago. Whatever is done, can't nobody go back and undo anything they've ever done, not even if you did it yesterday. So we got to get beyond the emotionalism of a historic event that was never documented correctly, and stand up together as a people to protect our communities and protect our future. If they're killing them at 15 and 16 years of age, then they are not able to reproduce themselves into the future. And if they're incarcerating them by the hundreds of thousands a year, they're not able to be in an environment which is conducive for them to reproduce themselves. What do you think they're trying to do? How much more evidence do we need? I can't do it by myself. Brother James can't do it by himself. Minister Farrakhan can't do it by himself. And no matter how we differ with one another, we are bound by circumstance because we're all black.
Go ahead, sister.
And they're not going to ask us how much money we make, and they're not going to ask us what zip code we live in. They're going to look at our black behinds and start killing us because we won't stand up. So anyway, let me go. I have so much to do tonight. Dr. Short, I can't thank you enough for sharing this very personal, touching story. I know it's hard for you because I know you took this death very hard, and I just want to thank you for sharing your story with us. For those of you in the chat room, thank you for your questions. Next time. Email me at ygblive@gmail.com. I will address your questions. ygblive@gmail.com. I'll be happy to address your questions. Brother Minister James, thank you again so very much. Brother Kareem, thank you as well for joining me tonight. Dr. Short, of course, you know, we will do it again. And please, before we go, please let the people know how they can sign the petition to have Brother Malcolm's death investigated in Mexico, and about the rally tomorrow.
The rally tomorrow is at 1911 Pennsylvania Avenue in Northwest Washington, D.C. We're going to start at 11 a.m., and we're likely to have another rally the following Friday on the 23rd in front of the White House. I'll certainly get that information out. The petition, all you need to do is look for a Secretary of State, John Kerry, under change.org and Malcolm Shabazz. If you don't see it there, email me, W as in water, Randy, R-A-N-D-Y-S-H-O-R-T, at gmail.com, and I will send it to you. Tweet this. I'm also on Facebook. If you can go to Facebook, there's the Malcolm Shabazz Memorial page. The petition is there. I'm Randy Short in Facebook in Washington, D.C. I only want to say one thing. They tried to, when they did the Betty and Coretta, and they put the lie in the mouth that this woman said Farrakhan did something. I told my mother they tried to kiss that boy when that was on television. And they made that boy seem like he was 20 years old when the fire took place when he was 12. The TV lies. We've got to talk to each other. The old spirit used to say, walk together, children. Don't you get weary. Walk together, children. Don't you get weary. We have to be together. All I have is a black woman, and all the black woman has is me. All I have is my sisters and brothers, and all they have is me. We must not let them control the discourse or the narrative of who we are, what we've been about. We have to get that devil out of our head.
Yes, sir. Absolutely. Okay, and also, if you're interested in signing a petition while it's fresh on your mind, you know I have two pages. You can find me under Aziza Queen or Queen Aziza. The petition is on my page. Please sign the petition tonight before you log off your computers. I really would appreciate your support in this effort. And we're going to close now. So, the announcements, I'm sorry. Join us tomorrow night with Student Minister James with our study group. Put on the new man as he welcomes Student Minister Tony Muhammad from our Western Region, Mosque number 27 in Los Angeles, California, as well as Sister Naira Muhammad from Florida. She's going to be joining us as well. And on Saturday, join us for Young, Gifted, and Black. You heard our host here, Brother Ronnie Muhammad. And on Sunday, join us for our Economic Development Program with Brother Vernon out of Columbia, Maryland. And on Monday, as you heard from Brother Kareem tonight, we'll be back with Conscious Black Nation at 8 p.m. Central. And on Tuesday, unfortunately, we're going to have another broadcast. Brother Jihad is not out of the hospital as of yet, but let's keep praying for him. Let's keep him up, keep him uplifted in spirit, because he was really anxious to come back. So if you get an opportunity, go by Brother Jihad's page, show him some love, let him know we miss him. And, of course, he'll probably be back in a couple of weeks. And next Wednesday, of course, join DJ Black Caesar and friends for our hip-hop comedy show. And next Thursday, I'll be back with another topic of some sort. So I thank all of you for listening. Thank all of you for your support. My Google Nation, my Yahoo Nation, peace. I love you all so much, all the callers who are listening. And to my friend Byron down in West Palm Beach, thank you for listening. And Miss Shirley, his dear mother, thank you all for listening so very much. I leave you as I came before you, and I greet in words of peace. Assalamu alaikum, one nation, one love. Good night, y'all.